everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have an awesome show for you. As you know, this season, quote unquote, we are doing topical-based shows. The topic this week, oh, drumroll or something I feel like is necessary. Headless CMSs. What is a headless CMS? You're going to find out if you listen to this show. It's a very interesting concept. We have two sponsors for you. Braintree, who are, you know, simple, secure payments, code that you can integrate in minutes. It's a, you know, it's an API for taking money from people for your web app. Kind of fundamental if you're building a web app. The URL there is braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. Please go to that URL to check it out. It's pretty cool. I don't think you're going to regret it. And FluentConf, which is coming up in San Francisco, March 6th. 7th through 10th, 2 days of intensive training on things like React, Node, CSS layout, followed by 2 days of sessions and that type of thing. Use the coupon code SHOPTALKS, plural, when you register to save 30% off of that conference coming up in lovely San Francisco. That's going to be a fun trip for all of y'all that bite on this and go. I don't think you're going to regret that either. For now, let's kick things off.
Well, welcome to another episode of Shop Talk Show. I should actually be using my Halloween soundboard because today's a spooky, scary episode about headless CMS.
If CMSs were a people, it would be like Spooky Hollow indeed.
I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Chris, who do we got here today?
Hey, we have a panel on this. We've invited some people who have inspired me to think more about this subject and I'm sure have lots of say about this subject. Number one, we have Matt Denowitz. Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Matt is VP of product at pitchfork.com, the most influential music site online. I don't know how to introduce
5.4.
Pitchfork.
I'm just...
What do you say? What is your, like, what do you really do at Pitchfork? I mean, I'm sure that's what you really do, but you know what I mean. What do you really do?
So my team just builds the website. We build the back end. We build the CMS. Kind of build anything that needs to be built and then make sure it stays running.
Yeah. So code, servers.
You got it.
Those things.
Yeah.
Nice. And you've been there a long time, thus the VP thing. And you know the ins and outs of how the Pitchfork infrastructure works, including CMS stuff.
So true. So true.
Okay. And Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Been here about 14 years.
So that's where Pitchfork is and where Matt Denowitz is. Those two things.
True.
Makes a lot of sense, really.
Heart of Logan's Square.
If you were to draw a Venn diagram, they would be overlapping.
I don't even think it counts when their two circles are the same circle. It's like a Venn no diagram.
Isn't every circle a Venn diagram? Really?
Sure, kind of. It's a half of one anyway. I met Matt through an event called SND Makes. SND is the Society for News Design, and our mutual friend and my girlfriend, Miranda Mulligan, runs it, and it was pretty darn fun, I think. It's like this like boutique hackathon thing where, you know, through the society and or whatever, a bunch of like cool, interesting, smart people come together and like build stuff and stuff. And we did one of those in Austin, and then we did it again just recently in Chicago. And Matt was at both of them, and it was pretty fun.
Yeah, so were you.
Yeah, I was. I was totally there. We got to hang out for like an entire weekend at the Cards Against Humanity offices, and it was pretty cool. So, yeah, I have lots of questions for Matt, and we're gonna pepper him with stuff. Maybe we'll even talk about baseball for a minute. I don't know though. Matt might get too passionate. And we also have Jeff Eaton. We've never talked to Jeff before. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Jeff, you are quoting from your page on lullabot.com where you work. Content strategy, Drupal architecture, multi-channel publishing, content modeling. Is it safe to say you care about CMSs a little?
I care to an almost unhealthy degree about CMSs, structured content, content reuse, and design. Oh, yeah, no, all that stuff. I love it.
Okay, cool. So you are at Lullabot and stuff. Do you want to tell us about that? Maybe a recent project or something?
Yeah. So I've been working with Lullabot. We're primarily a Drupal architecture and development shop. We've been at it for about a decade. Actually, this January is our 10th anniversary. And I've been with Lullabot for a little over 9 years. So been there for quite a while now. And we do projects like the Grammys website, MSNBC.com, a lot of NBC properties, Martha Stewart Living, the World Wrestling Entertainment Company. And we also work with a lot of, small to mid-sized clients like educational institutions and stuff like that who aren't necessarily like doing giant, media enterprises, but a lot of our like tentpole projects, the ones that we, sink a lot of time and energy into, are those like media and content publishing businesses where it's a big part of what they do. It's not just an adjunct or, part of their marketing or whatever, but it's like, putting that stuff out is their business.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, cool. Clearly a big, we hear, sometimes we even get questions about little agencies who are like, should I specialize in a particular CMS or something? It's like, here's kind of proof that doing that isn't the worst idea in the world with a massive client base you have and still being kind of a Drupal focused shop. If a big, just as a minor aside here, if like some big contract came along that they wanted Lullabot to do and they specifically didn't want Drupal, would you do it anyway? Or are you that like focused on Drupal that it wouldn't be?
No, I mean, we actually do other stuff. There's like, we've got people who are, ramping up on Swift and, we've done, React Node projects and stuff like that. I've done a bunch of like Django stuff on the side just because, I nerd out a lot, but it's such a big part of like the rhythm of like, the clients that we work with and stuff like that. That's the majority of the stuff that we do. We enjoy doing other things, but usually it's as an adjunct to, Drupal, large scale Drupal projects, just mostly because of, inertia and the kinds of clients that come in the door.
Awesome. So I don't think we've met, but this started, this concept in my head started as a, Dave and I, there was even an episode of this. We were at an event apart. Were we in Chicago, Dave?
Chicago.
Yeah, I believe we were. And,
State Street. It's a great street.
Is that, I don't even know what's going on there.
It's a,
there was a. We were invited to that one to do a live Shop Talk show, so that's why you can hear it here. And at that particular one, for whatever reason, this concept of headless CMS kept coming up over and over again. And so I would like to define it before we get too much further along, or at least what we all think of when we think of it. And Karen McGrain was there, who's obviously another big content person. And I also asked her to be on the show, but she is busy romping around New Zealand and said that the person that you have to absolutely talk to is Jeff Eaton. So that's why Jeff is here. Not that I wasn't aware of you already, Jeff, but it was an amazing endorsement by Karen. So while we're at it, this is what I think of it. I'm going to do a short one, then I'm going to pass it off to you two because I kind of want to know what you think about when you think of headless CMS. But I just think of some kind of like maybe even a UI for a backend, but the UI just absolutely doesn't care about like templating or like what the front end of the site is going to look like. It is only concerned with like accepting data being input, and then its output is literally just APIs only, like JSON API, whatever, hit this URL, I'll return you data that I'm storing within myself. So head refers in my mind to just like templates only. And a headless CMS would be a CMS that just doesn't have templates. What do you think, Matt? Is that anywhere near right? Or how do you think of this term?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. The way I think of it is just kind of decoupling data delivery from any backend or frontend. The backend just kind of becomes a permission to front end. Traditionally, the back end is thought of as the CMS, I guess, at least where I come from. And the advantage that gives you is you can put a lot of effort now into the data delivery and kind of marshaling who has access to that and refining it. And then you really don't need to care about who reads it or how it's read or how it's fed back into, which lets you kind of like decompose all of those concerns and spread them out to different teams who could maybe excel at the like individual concern level rather than altogether.
Okay, so that's already like a benefit of it is like organizationally you could split this thing at the concern level, so you could have like teams that do different parts of this and not like smash them together anymore. That's a good thing. Yeah. Let's hold off on that for a minute, because that's like a benefit of it. And like, let's define it first and then do the benefits thing. Jeff, what do you think about when you think about headless CMSs? Or
I think you definitely nailed it. I tend to think of headless CMSs as sort of existing on a continuum of like decoupling. Headless feels like a very extreme like version of a greater trend towards separating concerns. Like, I think, you know, even if you're doing a, you know, tightly coupled CMS, like Drupal traditionally is, you know, it's a single stack that handles the back end, the front end, the mid end, all the ends. But you can still do things that move you towards a more decoupled system if you're like, say, very scrupulous about making sure that the structure of your content doesn't bake in all kinds of design decisions in the underlying structure, and that's handled by your theme. Going full on headless is sort of a way to absolutely positively enforce that at the architectural level. You have to do that if you're building a headless CMS, because, you know, you've got a, you know, a separate system taking in data and, you know, spitting out HTML, or, you know, transforming it into, you know, data for an iOS app or something like that. So you're, it sort of forces a degree of adherence to that separation that is easy to fudge if you're using a system that is like fully baked from, you know, the back end to the front end.
That's fascinating. So we're thinking of, if we're thinking of CMSs on a spectrum of how decoupled they are from data to what it spits out, like back end and front end, different CMSs are at different points on that spectrum, and headless CMS is all the way on the totally decoupled part. And there's probably some that are like all the way on the totally not separated kind of thing. Like, I think of WordPress before there was like a JSON API and stuff as there is now. There's no way you can get at that data except for by creating a theme and templates and crap and using WordPress PHP functions to get at that data in there. That's completely coupled. Right.
Yeah. And even to the point where in WordPress, like a lot of business logic and a lot of the stuff that you might think of as being like the guts of, you know, what makes your site conceptually lives in the theme, because that's where a lot of the action is.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we could talk about advantages, but before that, I think this probably to some people out there feels a little weird. Like, okay, let's say I go for it. I'm now completely decoupled. What does that mean? I don't know. I guess short of why would I do that? What do I do with just an API of data then? Aren't you kind of like totally on your own then for what you do on the front end? Is it Matt?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it does mean you're kind of on your own. That kind of decoupling.
Like, how am I going to deal with URLs now? That was handled for me before. And like, what do I... But so
yeah, I think that's my question. I deleted my themes folder, gone in the trash, right? And now it spits out JSON. Now what do I do? Now I have to build something else, I guess, to consume that JSON. Is that how? I guess maybe walk us through like the my very first headless CMS.
Yeah. That would be the best Fisher Price product.
Fisher Price, yeah. My first headless.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, the way we would, you know, you'd approach this as in you now have kind of like a monolithic data store. And so whereas before you had an app like WordPress or the Django admin that would let you kind of like see your data and would handle all the data fetching for you, but also rendering an interface to manage it, as well as, you know, giving you the option to have views on the front end that access it, you're kind of blowing up everything. So now you're responsible for the consumption apps. So your front end, which would read the API and display it. You're also responsible now for a new CMS in the back end that's going to read those APIs and have to interact with authentication. And it's not that much different than how you would build like a mobile app, which is also going to have to just read an API and kind of, you know, deal with that signaling as well.
Yeah. So therein lies the rub in a sense, isn't it? So it's kind of like, I don't know, if I'm totally not decoupled, that means how am I going to build a mobile app? There better be some kind of API to this data, because maybe I'm choosing not to go responsive. I'm building a native app, but it still needs access to the same kind of data. I certainly wouldn't want to have two different CMSs that I'm trying to keep in sync. Like, mm-hmm. like all this, now that I'm decoupled, isn't it like, you know, hands in the air, awesome, because I can use the same API for both sites?
Yeah, you're
unicorns all the way down.
Yeah, you're reducing everything down to a basic data stream, and you're giving yourself the responsibility to build everything around that data stream now, whereas before you were given kind of like a batteries included platform.
Yeah, and I think that's like that's the thing, and people are this isn't theoretical, even though it feels a little theoretical. It's not really theoretical, right? I mean, I imagine a site like Pitchfork has a website, but it has a mobile app too. It also has who knows what all properties. You know, it's kind of like those are the easy ones to imagine. But as most of us have jobs and we're like aware of the complexities that come along with stuff, that it's like it's never just as simple as like just got to make the website better. It's like no, but this company needs this and this. Company needs this and whatever.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's like having your entire site depend on an RSS feed. You know.
Yeah.
That's not chilling at all.
that sounded both neat and terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, all the different properties that, you know, that you could drive with something like that, because at least like on the projects that we worked on, that's one of the common threads we find that the earliest, you know, the earliest groups that have been pushing and, you know, towards this whole headless direction. And like, I would probably describe it as, you know, first working with decoupling more and more of their systems, making sure that the design isn't, you know, tightly coupled into the content, you know, structures and stuff like that, and moving towards a headless approach and more of an API driven approach. They're the ones that have had to, you know, roll out mobile apps or deal with third party partners that want to consume rich versions of their client, you know, of their content for, you know, republishing, stuff like that. They've been having to deal with the complexities of the, you know, you're responsible for everything stuff that you were talking about on different endpoints in their sort of suite of, you know, properties and suite of, you know, things that they're putting out. And the idea of having to take on more responsibility for the front end stuff in particular isn't new for them. You know, that they've been having to do that for, you know, these different things in a piecemeal fashion. And in that kind of scenario, going headless and saying, okay, the website becomes just another one of these things on, that is an endpoint consumer of our underlying content store. That's a shift that for many of those types of properties can actually simplify things, because you don't have the website as this one monolithic thing and then everything else as an adjunct. It becomes everything works with this standard, you know, centralized system.
Yeah, and it's a design pattern that probably needs to be analyzed before jumping into, you know, if you just need a standard blog, you probably don't need something like that. But if you're in the syndication game, if you've got a lot of partners who need to read your content, if you've got a reason to spread across multiple devices, multiple platforms even, and you know, or even have like a heavy data exchange, then this is starting to look like a really attractive option.
Maybe we could do some cost benefit analysis. Is that okay? I imagine like, you know, napkin math. I'm thinking of it in, let's say, I'm trying to go to the iPhone app, the Android app, the Apple Watch, and the website. It sounds really great to have the central store, you know, to get to all those places. I guess though, and then it also seems smart to decouple the, let's call it the theme, but the front end website from the back end, so that you're not kind of overweighing the back end. I mean, we've probably all experienced where like you had a bad plugin in WordPress that crashed your WordPress, you know, and it was just purely a front end. Too soon. It was only when we logged in, but it's okay. But you might have like this, you know, you probably all like, we've all experienced that one random line of code takes down the whole system. So you kind of build up a defense, right? That's kind of like the, maybe a positive of this headless CMS thing is your front end mess ups don't affect your back end mess ups. Is that something you find?
I would say that's definitely like one of the perceived benefits. Sometimes it's also an actual benefit. the thing is like whether or not, you know, a back end, you know, the back end, you know, exploding in flames and you going and fixing it, you know, causes hiccups on the front end. It also depends on the architecture and how you set up, you know, a headless site. It really does depend. Like I like to think that like the oldest, you know, fully headless, you know, 100% decoupled, you know, CMSs were tools like, you know, Movable Type and Blogger way back in the day when, you know, Blogger was something that you logged into and then it made HTML files and would FTP them to your server for you. I also think I just dated myself, but like
it was a rudimentary Jekyll.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that like it was a tool that you used to manage your content and it spit out flat files that could live completely independently of the CMS. You know, you could literally uninstall Movable Type and your blog would still be there. You wouldn't be able to edit it, but it was all there, fully rendered and, you know, ready to go. And one of the major benefits of that in those days was like super scalable, like as fast as you could make your web server spit out static files was the maximum, you know, delivery speed of your content. And you didn't have to worry about things like, oh God, we added a new plugin and suddenly the site speed tanked and we've got to go, you know, track that down. Some of those things that I think became part and parcel of like the troubleshooting, you know, landscape of like, you know, modern big CMSs like didn't even exist back then because everybody was spitting out flat files. As things got faster and it became more practical to have like a full stack CMS that rendered everything on the fly, we learned that we could do all these crazy things. We could do personalization. We could do all kinds of cool dynamic stuff. But then we also ended up sort of sacrificing some of that ease of, you know, scaling. And I think like, I don't know. So some of the clients that we've worked with that have been most excited about it, that complete decoupling of, you know, we could even switch out to a different backend system. And as long as it exposed the same interface for the front end to pull from, you know, we could just
digested the backend data the same way. I mean, in the case of Jekyll, it's these markdown files with like some like YAML at the top of them. So as long as that's stored the same way, you'd think in a, I don't know, you'd think these days a little like a safer way is some kind of more like a database on the back end that doesn't necessarily need to be like in production, but exists somewhere.
And especially with like with a CMS and back end editorial stuff, I think I'll shut up and let Matt weigh in on this. But I think the editorial experience and the editorial workflow ends up becoming more and more of an important part of any CMS that an organization uses internally. And being able to iterate that over time and keep these improvements and just, you know, keep sort of improving it on an ongoing basis while being able to much more rapidly iterate the front end, being able to iterate those two pieces at different, like, you know, at different paces, I think is a real benefit for some groups.
I think that's a great idea. It's a great thought. And I think just to kind of support that idea, when you separate those two and you kind of make the CMS a little more important in terms of the UI, one thing you find is that you can always do a little bit better in the CMS. The CMS deserves more love because more often than not, it just becomes editorially and even like on the development side, just like means to an end, right? Like the CMS is always what's good enough. It's never something that you want to go back and like really blow out. We've made a couple passes here at Pitchfork at making a better CMS, and it's been eye opening in terms of, you know, how people respond when you make their kind of like crud operations much more beautiful to and natural to go through. I think that
kind of
way
or a bad way,
in a really good way actually.
Interesting.
You know, you give someone a more beautiful CMS and something that works a little more naturally in terms of how, you know, they think about composing a piece. And, you know, we've seen that with like Medium and we've seen that with other, you know, like Contently, things like that, where people are really thinking about like the editorial experience of writing inside the browser, but also composing with multimedia and putting together different objects that maybe have on the front end a different representation, but on the back end need, you know, just to kind of be previewed up front or to be built collaboratively, things like that. Point being, when you separate the concerns like this and you start to think about the CMS as just another user interface, you can actually kind of push the art of the CMS forward a little bit rather than being, you know, coming from our area, like the Django admin being mostly generated where it's good enough, you know, it's great. We can build custom interfaces for it, but really putting some TLC into the CMS goes a long way for, you know, just for the editorial side.
Well, I guess that plays into the advantage. To the decoupling a little bit. If you can have a team at a company that's job is to build this, you know, the content creation experience, that's pretty cool, mm-hmm. right? Like you own that, this team, make this, you know, work with the writers and make totally. What you want them to be great. And then have a different team be like, okay, we're going to just suck down data and make the awesomest reading experience we possibly can. And I'm, of course, you all have to talk to each other, but I like that idea of being able to split that up a little more cleanly.
But I also think that for teams who are, like, on our side, we share that responsibility. We don't have, like, a CMS team and a front-end team. For teams of generalists like that, it also just kind of compels you to think a little bit more. And it also kind of drives down something maybe to talk about later, is it starts to make you think about what you're actually storing in the data, because now you have several systems pulling it. And more than kind of like, mm-hmm. oh my God, we need to clean up this crazy HTML for the iPhone. Now it's, oh my God, we need to clean up everything in our database because we've exposed this to everything else on the planet now. And HTML is no longer good enough.
Suddenly pasting that Google ad code into the comments field feels like a terrible idea.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. See, that's, I mean, you can clearly...
That's not at all a made-up example.
you can make a bad headless CMS is the point, right? Just because you've made a headless CMS doesn't mean you've done a good job. For example, if you made a headless CMS and the fields you had available were title and content, and you just, you know, and inside that content was a bunch of HTML with classes on everything and whatever.
You know, you just wrap it with body and call it.
Yeah, like you haven't done a very good job of thinking about the data that you need. Hopefully, mostly, if you're going the CMS, headless CMS, you kind of know that and aren't doing that bad of a job.
But it also kind of compels the user to think a little more critically about what they're actually storing across all levels, about all experiences, which is kind of a nice external upside.
And like, this is actually something, so there's a client that I'm working with right now that's in the process of converting, I think, something like maybe 6 or 7 major brands of theirs over to a shared, you know, fully decoupled, like headless API driven system from like a full stack. Everybody builds their own, you know, monolithic CMS with a front end, you know, approach. And it's complicated because they're actually going through and trying to look at like, okay, what is everybody doing with their CMS? What kinds of things are you doing with that heavily coupled CMS? And, you know, to what Matt said, that, you know, really thinking through what it is you're doing, you know, what it is you're storing, you know, forcing the entire organization to become a lot more thoughtful about what the structure of your content is and what the meaning of what you're storing is, so that it can be repurposed in lots of different ways. That's a big shift. And I think it's especially tricky when you've got a lot of editorial design variation, when you may have like a standard, like predictable, easily templated format for like 80% of your content, but maybe 20% of it really needs to be able to break outside of that mold and, you know, be highly tailored in some way. How you handle those kinds of things, that takes planning and thought to not just turn it into another like heavily baked in, you know, thing that you'll need to completely redesign, you know, rebuild once the next redesign rolls around.
Wonderful. Let me tell you a little, to the cue the cool ad roll music. If you're interested in learning about web stuff, check out O'Reilly's Fluent Conf. It's coming up in San Francisco this March 7th, 8th is the training portion of it, with just hardcore learning sessions, like all day things where you go and like learn the crap out of a certain subject, you know. And then 8th through 10th are the sessions that you go to and get a sprinkling of the rest of the world. So web is what they say, programming, design, making the web great. Sessions explore everything from foundation design decisions to the details of JavaScript workflows, the latest JavaScript frameworks, conversations like React versus Angular 2. That's the kind of thing that's going to be talked about. Those will be the hallway conversations at FluentConf for sure. Hardware, chat, testing, performance, the cultures that make these projects succeed or fail. So there is a discount code if you want to go out to San Francisco, which I'm sure will be absolutely lovely that time of year. You're going to have a great time. Use the coupon code SHOPTALKS, plural, when you sign up for O'Reilly's FluentConf. Follow the link in the notes. All right, let's do, let's say, Matt, that you are going to theoretically make a new website. You're going to work on a new, you're going to work on Matt's Cool Baseball website, which is a major publication, and you're going to make a headless CMS. And as a, you're kind of a Python guy, a Django guy, a little bit, right? Or at least you like that tech.
Primarily,
stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to build a CMS. Let's say you like walk us through that, and then walk us through what you might do on the front end, because you kind of are a little into React these days too, right? So like some kind of Django React hybrid might be kind of rad.
Yeah, I think. I mean, do you want to talk specifically about that stack or just kind of broadly?
I don't know. Like, I don't mind broadly, but I think
let's go broadly.
Okay. The audience can handle tech though. Don't worry. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Not afraid. Cool. So if I was starting a new project, I would start off by, like most cases, figuring out my data model. And I would start with the data model not only because that's going to inform first getting some sample data in so I can set up maybe the Django admin, if that's what I'm going with, or WordPress, but also because I know that my goal is to serve this over the API. So I want to kind of nail down up front what the like backbone of the application is going to be data-wise. After that, I would probably flesh out a little bit of just like a coupled together scenario to make sure that I'm on the right path. Uh-huh. Maybe get a couple of CRUD views going on. And that's when I start to think, where can I intelligently decouple some of these concerns? That's when I'm probably grabbing Django REST framework or whatever equivalent in the language I'm using. That's when I'm thinking about on the front end, what do I need to do for data fetching? I'm kind of looking at the options of, do I want to do a totally like single page application style app, or do I want to decouple it? If I arrive at the answer yes, then I'm looking at, do I want to serialize this over the wire? Do I want my CMS to be coupled to the data models? As in, do I want to run the API out of the same code base as I do for the CMS for now? Or do I want to totally have like a standalone service that just talks to the database and then handles authentication on its own so I can read and write with different users, and also marshals into if I want JSON or if someone wants YAML or if I need a syndication partner that only takes XML, things like that. And then I'm starting to look at first decoupling from the CMS if that's the decision I go down. So I have now a standalone data service. I can build up a CRUD service in the back that maybe only I have access to. Maybe users don't log in there. Users probably don't even need to know about it. That also gives me the opportunity to hook up. Let's say I don't want to have authentication baked into my API. I can use a service like Auth0 or something like that. They can store all the user information. Maybe I don't need a user database on my own here. And from there, I can start to worry about payments or anything else, all those other nice features, kind of the ETL side if I need to do any data loading. But now I've got spread out kind of like a strong pole in the middle that I can tether all of my different interfaces to. I've got a stable data model. I've got, you know, whatever CMS that I would choose to use, and I've got a way for the front end to access it. And I can consider the front end to be just one of many, including, you know, the CMS would be the front end too. I think that's probably how I would start off at a high level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I am a little, I don't fully have my head wrapped around how I might digest a fully JSON API into a fully functioning click-aroundable website that looks like any other website, if not better somehow, faster somehow. How I couldn't do it. I mean, I could learn how to do it, but it seems like, okay, so all I have is this JSON API, and you expect me to really super quickly render an entire website out of that. I wouldn't quite know where to start. I mean, I could figure it out, but you know what I mean? It's like I don't totally get it. You use a front-end router, right? And
mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's say you took a React app like Fluxible. Fluxible comes out of Yahoo. It's a great implementation of Flux. It's very straightforward. They give you all the services you need so that you can dispatch actions. Actions can load data remotely. Those like action responders, we'll call them. I know it's not like a Flux term, but you receive data, let's say, from somewhere you've loaded. You put that into a store. Your store then triggers signals in your UI updates. So you could use something like Fluxible to, first off, render your React components on the front end, which your backend doesn't need to know anything about those React components. But again, you could share them if you wanted to. You click a button to say load, you know, 100 blog posts or something like that. You would then dispatch an action. You would read from the JSON API. The JSON API would then send you all of your blog posts or whatever filtered posts that you would like, because you can customize your API then to send back in filtered results. And then you'd store those client-side and render appropriately.
I want to try it. I need a practice JSON file.
You get hooked real fast.
I'm affirming some things that I already thought. Like if you did this kind of thing, maybe, you know, my content gets to like kind of like live forever. Like I've done so right by my content that this content can go forth and serve things that we don't even know about yet. Like maybe there's some like cool thing that's going to need my content. Well, fine. Hopefully it can eat APIs because that's what I'm serving, you know, and surely it can. And also like, oh, JSON, that's not the cool format anymore. It's, you know, it's JSON B or something weird. No problem. I'll just adjust some middle layer to start spitting that out too, because the data is just there, and you know, a template or a front end template might suck down data and turn it into a certain format. That's all an API is doing too. It's just sucking in some data and putting it in a certain format that's useful to somebody else. So I get this kind of content that might just live forever.
I really like the idea of just designing arbitrary data, like data types now, just to make sure that your API can spit it out. Just, you know, YAML? Yeah, that's old hat. We've got SPAML.
Yeah. Just inventing some new data formats? Sure.
The funny thing is like Flickr for a long time had like the 97 different formats or whatever that you could accept all of their data feeds in. And one of them, I think, was lolcode, like the parsable language of lolcats. So you could get like an RSS feed, and it was a documented data format that was hilarious, but utterly
I would
useless.
Think Eaton would be a cool format, because then your marketing could be like, what's your app? Eaton, you know?
It is one of the things I think is interesting, though, is that like this idea, the idea that Matt's mentioned a couple of times of like solidifying on like a predictable and at least relatively stable like data structure, or, you know, in a lot of the sites we work with where there's a lot less like quote unquote data than there is content. Like, you know, we don't deal with like transactional stuff. Usually it's, you know, individual entities of content that are related to each other and have, you know, fairly heavy amounts of stuff coming with them, whether it's media or, you know, text or whatever. But like making sure that those structures are predictable and that you pretty much know what the underlying model of the stuff you're creating and maintaining and sticking out there is, regardless of what format it's going out in, you know, that's a really huge like stake in the ground. And that makes it easier to like iterate on your back end, because you can think about ways of making, you know, manipulating and editing those kinds of things smoother, as a purely back-end UX concern. And then you can think of, oh, what are interesting and cool things that we could do on the front end with these sort of content resources that we have at our disposal, without necessarily having to concern the editors and, you know, the content creators on the back end with every single thing that's going on the front end. It can really bear a lot of, you know, cool fruit.
Totally.
Fruit. Delicious.
Somebody's got to play devil's advocate here, because this is turning.
It's going to happen in 1 second. I'm going to let Dave loose on it just for a moment.
Cut to an ad. yeah, brother, I'm getting amped
cool
up.
Beatboxing sounds or whatever. The URL we're sending you to this time is braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. Developers around the world have embraced the Braintree V.0 SDK as the easiest way to add secure mobile payments to their apps and websites. So it supports Android, iOS, JavaScript clients, SDKs in .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby. I don't even know if there is any more languages than that. That's all of them. Just kidding, but it's pretty close to covering the entire web, I would say. And they, you know, they provide you example code. Like, I want to use Braintree because I want to take PayPal and Bitcoin and Venmo and Apple Pay and Android Pay or credit cards, whatever. I want to use one API to do it because I don't want to go friggin' insane taking money. You can use Braintree to do that and just look at their reference implementations, use their sandbox, figure it out, get going. You can even call them on the phone and they'll hand walk you through the thing. So that's pretty cool. Pretty good customer service. URL again is braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. All right, Dave. So while we are at this AEA Chicago, where we are talking about this, I got the sensation as you were sitting right next to me that it wasn't your favorite idea ever, and that it may occasionally, maybe cause more problems than it's worth. So what was that? Did I characterize you okay there? Or?
Decent characterization. I appreciate it. Thank you, Chris. let me say I'm a fan. Like I think it's a, like in the modern era where you have to syndicate to a phone and a watch and a car and a, you know, a speaker in your living room, light bulb or whatever. Like, I think like an API makes sense, right? Like, I think that's a very important, like, architectural decision. My question is, you know, let's say I run a publication and I heard this podcast and I'm like, oh, Shop Talk said do headless CMS. We're doing a headless CMS now. I think my question is, although it solves a technical problem, does it create people problems along the way? In the sense that, you know, if I'm a designer and I design something and then the front end developer's like, oh, we don't have a data point to actually design that, to make that design happen. Okay, well, then the designer's like, could you ask somebody about the data point? And this, so then the front end guy goes to the API guy and says, hey, can we get this data point in the data thing? And the API guy's like, oh, yeah, sure, totally. But I got to go talk to the database guy who runs all the databases. So, okay, let me go to the database guy and he's doing this. And he said, yeah, he can add that field in the database, and he comes back and says, cool, but now we got to talk to the CMS authoring tool and we got to do that. And then the API guy talks to the front. And then I'm just wondering if like we're creating nodes of communication,
silos that you might call them.
To be fair, you have just described the current project I'm on.
Yeah, these definitely sound like problems that would exist even if you didn't kind of like separate your problems out.
Bingo. Yeah, I guess like, if it was a monolith, I could maybe just go commando and make it happen and like pray my gods the commit lands, right? But like it seems like we're you know, oftentimes we're very naive in saying like, oh, this is technically the best, so it's the best. And we kind of forget the organizational overhead of like, well, I just created 16 meetings to add a field to the database. Just per some design concept. So I'm curious what, I don't know what your experience is mostly. Cause, you, Jeff, I think you said you're kind of going through this right now, but, are we creating more people problems just to solve a technical hurdle?
In theory, I think sort of as Matt alluded to, these are not the kinds of problems that don't exist in a fully coupled, you know, system in a traditional CMS, you know, that does front end and back end. It's just that oftentimes the fact that it's a single code base, it's a single language that both the templating and the back end code and stuff like that are both handled in. Oftentimes you'll have more cross-functional developers who would be able to, say, go in and dip into any one of those things to do a small tweak like that. On a team where the skill sets are more divergent, like say you've got a PHP-based backend and a React-based frontend, and it's literally two different pools of developers and two different skill sets and maybe two different divisions of the company that handle those things. Yeah, you know, you've sort of got a bucket brigade of, you know, decisions and requests that need to get, you know, relayed through that. But again, I think that to some degree, that's an organizational thing, not something that's inherent in the technology, but it absolutely does need to be kept in mind that it's a lot easier to sort of fudge those things late in the game if you're using a monolithic stack, whereas in a completely decoupled system, you're making sort of a contract. And if you come up with a design that needs something more to go on, you got to figure out where that data is coming from. One of the ways that we've tried to solve that is baking things like editorial intent into like some of the metadata in ways that aren't necessarily tied to particular design outputs, but give designers a lot of freedom, you know, how to interpret a particular thing on a front end, like giving editors the ability to say, set relative priority on things, not necessarily like what order they're in, but like, you know, regardless of where it appears, when this story comes up on the front page, it should be, it should really be accentuated compared to all the other stories. Do what you will on the
front
end.
I like the opposite
end,
of that.
But I want to capture that.
Garbage. This story, bury
yeah,
this
like
thing.
We are contractually required to put this on the front page, but for the love of God, if you can just, you know, stick it by.
Yeah.
but yeah, you know, things like that, capturing those sort of, you know, editorial intentions that are going to be part of the ongoing workflow that you find yourself communicating with design, but the editor is the one making those decisions. Like, should this be accentuated? Should this be sort of, you know, toned down a bit compared to the other content? Do I want to feature, do I want to present this in a particular way? What aspect of this story should
this be? This could be a whole other front, show. You know, is like, how do you design those fields? Oh. You know, because that's.
But like thinking through those things beforehand as a part of like the data and content modeling process and part of the editorial, like, you know, workflow process can really save you a lot of time up front. Because if you're just thinking purely of the what data do we present, like what would go into the RSS feed, it's very easy to then suddenly get to the design stage and say, oh God, but now we need these three pieces of metadata to determine what goes in the upper right slot versus what goes, you know, in the center. But if you've captured some of those emphasis and prioritization decisions in metadata that the editors can control, you can make lots of design decisions without suddenly having to like run around in circles.
I'm sure there's a limit too, because you don't want publishing an article to be a 15-page wizard either, right?
True.
Yeah.
It looks like you're writing a review.
One other thing to kind of think, and this is mostly for the dev side, is that when you split these apart, you're not going to be able to share as easily components between the front end and the back end. And that, you know, even thinking about, you know, we need a button that does this. Okay, now we need an API endpoint. It's now in the CMS, we need to reflect this, but our CMS is running a different stack than the front end is. If we're using React on the front end, but we're still on jQuery, Backbone, whatever on the back end, now we've got a problem. We can't share the styles. We can't share the code. Now we can't allow people to preview. How do we get people from the CMS to the front end to be able to preview? So that along with kind of like the editorial hinting and planning that like absolutely needs to happen with this, you also have to kind of map out ahead of time to make sure you don't lose time in an existing system if you're porting that over, just totally rebuilding your back end when you've only committed to rebuilding the front end.
But also imagine it being like, I just want a preview of what this is going to look like on the web. Well, too bad you can't have it. It's decoupled now.
Yeah. Now you have to invent the universe from scratch.
And I mean, I think it's important to note that like these things aren't unsolved problems. They are not like they're not unsolvable problems. Like putting together a preview system for a decoupled, you know, for a decoupled CMS, yeah, that is absolutely utterly doable. But it's the kinds of stuff that have been treated as like table stakes features for a lot of highly coupled CMSs for quite a few years that, you know, oh, well, of course that's baked in and it's not unsolvable, but you've got to step back and think, okay, what things have I been taking for granted? And, you know, what ones do I really need? Do we really need to build into our new system? And what things can we just, you know, leave behind?
Pretty interesting. So what about some other than like pitfalls, which we covered a little bit, but what's some, you know, for those of you that have worked with this a little bit, is there anything where you've been working with it and you've been like, you know what, that's not great, but overall worth it, but ugh. Or, you know, it's just something that kind of sucks about working with a headless CMS. Is there anything that comes to mind?
I'll say, I don't think this is inherent in working with a headless CMS, but it's one of those things that is easily overlooked. And I think that the Drupal community in particular, which is, you know, where I spend a lot of my time, is sort of starting to, you know, sober up about this aspect of it, because Drupal 8 just shipped with like the ability to roll out RESTful endpoints, you know, with like a couple of clicks. Just that's one of the features of, you know, Drupal core now. Yeah, hooray, unicorns, rainbows, everything is, you know, magical and bright. What could possibly go wrong? But one of the things that I think a lot of people are suddenly realizing is that all of the approaches and best practices to optimizing and, you know, squeezing the most performance out of a monolithic CMS on the server side, you know, it may be tricky, but like a lot of people have gotten used to how you do that. You know, there's caching layers and, you know, whatever language specific, you know, opcode caching systems you got. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that. But if what you're doing now is just serving up JSON when people hit endpoints, it's very, very easy, for example, to create a page that is now, instead of making one request and chugging on it for, you know, 2 seconds, is now making 30, 40 requests for different little bits of JSON data to populate each sidebar, to populate the main content, to populate related articles. So suddenly you have to start thinking not just about, do I have, you know, JSON endpoints for all of these individual pieces of data, but now how do I start optimizing this so that I'm not making 30, 40 requests just to get listings of related articles, because that can impose just as much of a performance penalty. And it's very easy to sort of approach it in a quick to develop but difficult to scale fashion. And that's where you start, you know, coming up with different intermediary layers to, you know, bundle all those things together so that, you know, you've got like maybe a lightweight Node app as the intermediary layer that collects all of the 19 different packets of information that are needed for a particular type of page, stuff like that. I mean, I'm glossing over all kinds of details, but that's one of the things that I think really complex, highly dynamic sites that have lots of cross-relational stuff. It's easy to overlook that and, you know, sort of say, yay, it's just JSON feeds now. And you got to plan for that too once you get into the performance scaling part.
Do frameworks like React or even Backbone or, you know, these kind of front end frameworks, do they help you manage cache at all in these sort of situations, or is it kind of build your own cache so you don't, like you said, hammer your server into the ground?
They give you enough tools, and this is kind of like toolkit dependent, to store the data so that if you want to go back to a page you've already loaded, you don't necessarily have to reload it. I think what I found is on our side, we've actually ended up engineering such that anyway, when you go back to the page, you're going to reload it. It's not that much different than how, you know, a very coupled app would be, where if you change the page, you're doing a data refresh. But I guess one of the pain points I'd like to point out is actually the tooling just is still kind of catching up. There's a wide variety of tools, none of them totally mature. And the documentation is sparse enough that it can be a little frustrating getting started on just having a totally like JavaScript centric site. So taking the plunge on that side to something, if you want to go down the React road or really anything with like server side rendering that is just pulling it on the API, and it seems like JavaScript's the most attractive option for that, server and front end. The tooling can catch you up for a little bit and cause a lot of cost. There's no obvious way to authenticate a user through a single page app. So you're going to have to spend a little time figuring out, like, do I want to send a token back in my hash? And can I set up all SSL and then turn off logging, you know, in the redirects to make sure that I don't have a security leak? If I have other information in the hash because I'm using a hash router, can I easily pick out the token that I've sent back? Or do I want to use some other kind of authentication? How do I socially authenticate people? You know, stuff like that. There are still going to be pain points where you're going to require a server. You can't go totally, you know, JavaScript or you can't just rely on the API. But one of the other problems is also you're now maintaining an API. So whereas you only had a website before, now you've got like two problems, right? So now you've got an API that's open to everyone to some degree that you have to make sure is up, and you've got this website you got to maintain, and there's a CMS you have to maintain. So you're definitely blowing out your responsibilities a little bit too, which can be a bit of a drain.
Yeah, I think especially as the headless thing has caught on and has like excited a lot of people in the Drupal world, there's been a lot of the pushback has been sort of like, you know, has been around the idea that this is a solution to people wishing they had more flexibility at the templating layer. You know, if we only did this in, you know, if we just completely ditched the, you know, full stack rendering and we just did our own stuff purely on the front end, we'd just be able to do whatever we wanted. And, you know, true, but you're also taking on a lot of complexity if you just decide you're building an app because your CMS's templating layer has rough edges that you wish you could ignore. Really realizing the benefits of it depend on hitting a more of those, you know, we want to be able to iterate the front end and back end differently. We're dealing with lots of partners and, you know, we need to be able to expose our stuff in different formats and different, you know, endpoints and stuff like that. Those are where a lot of the really big benefits are realized. you know, just doing it because like front end tech is moving faster and is, you know, cooler than, you know, whatever version of jQuery ships with your CMS. That's where I think it's easy to get sucked in by the unicorns and rainbows promises and then become very disappointed that, you know, oh my God, now I'm stuck in, you know, troubleshooting this grunt file.
Man, I feel like this episode needs like a part two.
Making me think of an idea of a static JSON web, you know, like, you know, there's static websites and how cool they are. It's an API that publishes static JSON
files. It's like Jekyll, but just a giant JSON
file. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Go to this website, silo.pocalypse.se, right? Silopocalypse. It is exactly what we're talking about. It is a beautiful...
It sounds like XSLT all over.
Yeah, it's just a JSON file on the internet. I love it. It's my favorite website now.
Oh, that is so weird. Okay. So I got a way for us to wrap this up. Let's say you have some CMS that isn't particularly decoupled or on this spectrum of decoupled or not decoupled that we talked about, which I really like. Let's say you're not as decoupled as you wish you were. What are some steps to get closer to that? Should this be appealing to you as our final round table kind of question, Jeff?
I'm actually more of a back-end nerd than a front-end nerd, like despite all of my cheerleading for this. I would say one of the interesting ways you can do it with like zero impact on your current infrastructure is to actually look at the data and look at the database, look at the content and data structures that you've currently got, see if you can improve them and streamline those, and then start experimenting writing lightweight apps that consume that data first. Like, is it possible for you to make something that pulls your content out and does something interesting with it without talking to other stuff? If you can start getting comfortable with that way of dealing with your underlying content and data, and you feel like it, you know, yields some cool benefits, actually doing the work of building out like an API might be really beneficial. But like investing the time and thinking through those underlying content structures and what your real editorial needs are and how this content is going to be used, those are questions that will benefit you even if you never fully like decouple it, even if you never go headless.
I think that's totally right. I just to add on to that, there's always that old rule of the shape of your data will start to take the shape of your UI, starting with just like a simple user interface that will let you test what you actually need out of an API should teach you just about everything you would need to know before taking this plunge.
Interesting. So any other thoughts on kind of baby stepping towards decoupled headless action?
It just seems like with things like the new Drupal core features and the WordPress API and stuff, most people can probably turn on some kind of API at this point and then fire up CodePen, ka-ching, and start you know, tinkering with this stuff. Is that I'm not too far off, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's totally doable.
I love it. Sounds good. We didn't have a lot. We, you know, normally we answer a few questions. We're both running out of time. And the fact is there wasn't a lot of questions specifically about this. It was more just like, you know, blobbity WordPress, you know, the kind of questions we normally do here. So we're going to let that be and kind of wrap up. What do you got, Dave?
Jeff, Matt, before we go, how can people follow you and give you money? And then what's one thing you'd like to plug before you go? We'll start with Jeff.
So I'm Eaton, EATON on Twitter, not to be confused with either the Toronto Eaton Center or Eaton Corporation.
The new data format.
Let me tell you, I hear about everyone's lunch.
The wrong business.
But yeah, it's a lot of the work that I'm doing and the projects that I'm working on are at lullabot.com. Also a Drupal-backed React on the front end headless project. Something that I'd love to plug. I'm going to be actually talking about content modeling for like structured systems and capturing design intent. Some of that stuff that I was talking about a little bit. I'm going to be talking about that at Confab Intensive this September in Seattle. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Cool, Matt.
Cool. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Denowitz. I think my name was in the tweet earlier, so you can find it there. And don't really have anything to plug, but keep an eye on Pitchfork. We've got some really exciting stuff coming up. And if you're a baseball fan, saberarchive.com is a sabermetrics research archive that I run. And we're about to get a very nice site refresh in time for the regular season to start. So pretty excited about that.
All right. Well, if thank you, dear listener, for downloading this and your podcast of choice. We really appreciate it. Star, heart, favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Share it on Twitter. While you're there, follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. We give you tens of tweets a day. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like?
Shoptalkshow.com.